This is the Financial Coconut Podcast, Singapore's first personal finance podcast network. I'm your host, Reggie, aka Your Chief Financial Coconut. Every Thursday, you'll be chilling with me and my guests, who are some of the quirkiest, geekiest people we can find on the internet about how they do money and life. So sit back, relax. We are a few days away from the weekend. Welcome to Chills with TFC.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, I would say if you're looking at like maybe hot food tapa, I would say like glass or metal would be a good option. Mm. Yeah, because plastic leaks chemicals as well.
Even all the what free, BPA free, all those, they also leak.
So the thing about BPA, what's BPA free? Mm. It's only free of BPA.
Okay, at least I got all the rubbish inside, right? Okay,
exactly.
Welcome to Chills with TFC, where we sit down with the geekiest, quirkiest individuals to learn about how they do money and life. I'm your host, Reggie, aka Your Chief Financial Coconut, and today we dive deep into this idea of sustainable renovation. The thing is, many Singaporeans fall into two buckets when thinking about renovation. This is my home, I want the best. Or, we already spent so much on buying a home, I don't want to take up more reno loans. Which bucket are you? But more importantly, is there a sweet spot somewhere where we can live comfortably, be budget friendly, and still be sustainable, since it's trendy topic today lah, huh? A quick thing, hot take. Did you realize that actually the wet market is very sustainable? Where's the packaging? So it is not always about the new edgy ideas, but sometimes looking back to think about what works. Today I'm joined with startup founders Bolong Chiu from Solar AI, Lester from the very expensive paint company Gush, and Pamela from ThinkCuts to discuss the hot topic, sustainable renovation. This is Chills with TFC.
Maybe you can just introduce yourself a little bit so that, you know, like we can warm up a little bit. Yeah, usually that's kind of how I roll lah. Okay, yeah. So how about you can introduce yourself a little, like, what do you do, blah, 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 blah. Like, for someone that don't know you at all.
Yeah, so I'm Pamela. I founded ThinkCuts. ThinkCuts basically work with businesses to offer, like, sustainable options for consumers. So we create, like, impactful offerings with businesses for consumers in mind.
Mm. So today you're here to tell me what the businesses do with it. Yeah. So that my consumers can be a little bit smarter.
Exactly. I'll spill the beans.
Okay. Very good. And
my name is Bolong. I run a company called Solar AI Technologies. We provide zero upfront cost solar as a service models for residential as well as small commercial property owners starting in Singapore.
Okay. So do you manage the supply? Like, is it part of, do you manufacture or you're just doing the financing part of the thing?
Financing, and then we work with a set of partner contractors to install the projects. But basically, to the customers, the value proposition is really like a subscription or like a as a service model for getting solar on their roofs.
Okay, then you make the differential from there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, of course. You need to do something. You need to make a business. And yourself?
So I'm Lester, the co-founder and CEO of Gush. Gush is
a very expensive paint company.
That's right.
Yes.
Well, Gush is an advanced materials company, actually. We develop sustainable building materials that functionalizes all the surfaces around us. Mm. So one of the surfaces that we see that's biggest around here is actually our walls. And so we thought, why hasn't anyone thought about leveraging this big surface area to deliver impact? Another key surface area that we see are our windows. And we also then thought, you know, why hasn't anyone thought about using this surface area to reject heat while allowing the maximum transparency in order to increase energy efficiency? So these are just some of the solutions that we've developed over the course of the 5 years that we've been around.
Yeah, so today we are here to talk a little bit about renovation, you know, this whole sustainability thing, because it's like the talk of the town, you know, everybody wants to care a little bit about this whole sustainability thing. Okay, as you can tell, I come from a position that I'm a bit like, not too sure about it, right? Yeah, because for me as a chief financial coconut, I know, and I'm very out to care for my consumers and my listeners to try to understand, like, does this matter, right? Do I need to care about it? So today we're going to focus on this whole like environment, renovation, consumer spending, you know, all that kind of jazz, right? And I think the first question to the floor is, what is sustainable? How does it work? How do you define sustainability?
That's exactly the issue, right? I think like sustainability has been so generalized and used, especially in a corporate setting, to basically shape your agenda in a way that is so-called green. To be fair, initially, when we first started out the business, we were really very AI-focused. So we built computer vision models on satellite imagery to be able to automatically detect building outlines. So computer vision, I think you can quite safely say, okay, it is AI. But then it's a super good point because we do actually have plans to rebrand. And we've really bought a different domain. It's called Solar Easy.
Okay.
Because we start to realize that that is much more the value proposition of what we bring. Right? A lot of people think, okay, AI is sexy and that's like, okay, startup AI focus. But after a while, at least for us, we start to realize that AI is not the core tenet of like what is really important to the consumers, what is really solving the problem. So that's why we want to brand out of it.
Yeah.
But to that point on sustainability, I think in general, sustainability should be defined, and you can look at it as sustainability in terms of like the broad ESG scope, right? But for us, our view of it is very much environmental focused. Social governance, those are all like more corporate governance related, right? And ultimately for me, I think like the core metric is really about carbon impact. And that is something that's measurable. Of course, I mean, then there's like a whole kind of like bucket of questions which arise around like, how do you measure it accurately, fairly, transparently? And that's like a whole other issue.
Yeah. Okay. And for you?
Yeah, I think for sustainability, when we work with like businesses, you always care about like where the products are from, how it's being sourced, how it's being produced. So I think not just the carbon emissions, but also like the whole supply chain, the people involved, and as well as how these materials are being sourced. And then ultimately, when it goes to the consumer, right, the impact and the quality that it brings, what's the true like value it provides to the customer? Like, we can't just be green for the sake of it, but it also has to deliver like a true value proposition to the customer.
Technically, you can. Nobody's regulating this space.
Technically, you could, but you shouldn't.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, just to keep the integrity of the word, right? Sustainability,
But are people keeping the integrity of the word? Because I see sustainable everywhere. It's just like mental health, just like self-care. Yeah. Everything is self-care today, right? Also can self-care, right? Everything is self-care. So everything is sustainable. You know, are merchants in the space actually regulating themselves?
I would say like merchants themselves, like they do have like the responsibility to be accountable because as you said, right, like consumers are being more aware. With your podcast, people are getting more educated. That's when like they really have the accountability to be responsible in their use. But let's say if they're not, then that's when like, clearly they will run into issues and they may face backlash, which they really shouldn't be doing that. So yes, it's not regulated, but you should still be accountable for the sake of your business at the end of the day.
So the activists are very active in trying to regulate the businesses in a sense. Do activists try to double down on some of these companies' claims? That's it, how it works.
Yeah, I would say like more recently, like probably most of us would have seen like how Shine was like being put in the spotlight, right, of like how they really have very poor labor practices and environmental impact. I think that was one really good example of how like activists or even like watchdogs, right, are just like calling them out and being like, hey, you deliver like fashion products at such like breakneck speed and of course like low cost, like definitely like people and as well as the environment is at this mercy. So I'll say like that's definitely like a good example of like why you shouldn't be not sustainable and of course like the pitfalls of that. But that being said, for sure, like there are companies that could really be more accountable in their use of the word. But that being said, I think we can like also be a lot more knowledgeable.
The issue is, I think the issue with sustainability is that like there have actually been quite a lot of studies. Just if we just zoom in into like consumer goods or products, there have been quite a lot of studies which show that essentially if you brand your products as sustainable, there is that sustainable price premium, right? Which is exactly like I think where this question is stemming from, which is terrible. But then for the marketeers in the corporates, they see it as a good thing. Then there's also like a division of like what a marketeer wants to do with a product versus like what is actually like say like the supply chain or the value chain of the product, which ultimately then it comes down to like, okay, how can you create transparency across the entire value chain to be able to track and measure all of this, which is difficult because
it's a lot of work for the consumer, right?
So there are a lot, like the activists generally will stem from a view, and it's a lot of like, you know, small groups, maybe even individuals who then go in and like research the entire value chain, try and figure out like labor practices, try and figure out, you know, like try and measure what is the carbon impact of like individual processes and then start to put them together. But then if you don't have a standardized body, it is very difficult to come with a certain measurement, right? Because who is reporting correctly or not? Like there are so many suppliers down the value chain. Difficult problem to solve, but definitely an important one.
So Desmond Lee must come on the show, right? Desmond, waiting for you, huh? Okay, waiting for you. Yeah, but what about you?
I think everyone has made great points, and to be honest, like, sustainability is a word that's been thrown around quite a bit, like you mentioned, right? Mm-hmm. And no one really knows what the hell this is. To be honest, it's actually like it's a moving target. Every year, what sustainable means also changes, right? Like in the past, maybe if you have something that can last forever, then it is truly sustainable because you don't have to keep buying things, right? These things here, plastics, right? For example, last time, maybe it could be very sustainable, but now...
Yeah, plastics was very sustainable. Yeah. Do you still consider plastic sustainable?
Now,
do you guys still consider plastic?
I think there's also like a social consequence to everything, right? So then now if majority of the population thinks that plastic is unsustainable, then it will be unsustainable. To me, I think sustainability is about taking the long-term view towards consumption in order to prevent the depletion of our natural and physical resources. So as long as you have that long-term view, right, towards everything you buy, and then you have the concept of using it again and again, obviously there's a chance that it's regenerative in the process, right, like what you do as well, then there's a role for sustainability to play in this area.
Okay. So that is like technical, right? And if we want to like define it from a consumer standpoint, right? How do I call myself a sustainable consumer? I got to look out for the longer term impact and forego the short term view of things, or how does that work? How do we apply?
As much as you can. Yeah. You can try to do that. That's why people have like reusable containers that they could dapao food from, right? Rather than using those styrofoam boxes.
It adds up.
I think, you know, sustainability is a real imbalance, right? Between our human ecological footprint versus our declining biocapacity to support that footprint, right? And this demand and supply of nature is really tilted and is decreasing furthermore because of our increasing population growth and consumption vis-a-vis our reducing biocapacity to support that growth.
From a human perspective, right? Again, why do I need to care about sustainability?
To what Bolong said, right, in terms of the proxy as to what you measure, one of the key problems that we see, one of the key implications of sustainability is climate change, right? And climate change is because of the reckless consumption that we have, and that then leads to higher energy requirements, which then is correlated to increased emissions of greenhouse gases, right? And then this is the manifestation of being unsustainable in our consumption habits. So then to consumers, I guess it is about thinking about the implications of what you buy, right? If there is a long-term effect of what you have, whether or not there's additional benefits over the long run that you can enjoy from this product rather than have it for a short period of time and then it goes to the waste paper basket.
Okay, fair. So a lot of listeners at this point in time are either looking at a new home, you know, maybe their BTO delayed 2 years, they're very annoyed, like, I get it, okay? Or they are looking to like trade up their home, right? So a lot of our listeners are at that period of time. And so renovation becomes a thing, right? And as homes become more and more expensive, renovations sound like they can also become more expensive, right? Today, I think more and more people are also looking to spend more for renovation. But we're not talking about spending more or less. I think it's about spending well. I really want to kind of find out, like, so how do I contextualize sustainability in my renovation process?
I think there's one thing that I want to add first, which is like, it's quite often or quite common that like the first thing that comes into mind when you think about sustainability or like making your home more sustainable, for example, is a trade-off. Like, I think a lot of people will jump to conclusions that like, hey, okay, if I want something to be more sustainable, it means more expensive. But personally for me, and one of the reasons why I feel so bullish about solar and quite a lot of other technologies around it as well, is that these technologies have now come to a point of maturity where there is both an alignment of environmental good as well as financial benefits, right? Like with solar, it's like, okay, the existing model in the market, sure, you pay upfront for it first, but then generally within 6 to 8 years, you break even. And then thereafter, panels are warranted for like 25, 30 years, right? So you just get free electricity. Like from that perspective, it's like, okay, the cost of solar has already been fallen below that of traditional energy sources for like the last 5 years globally. And so like now these technologies are there in place where it is already a cost saving. And then when you do it, it's like, hey, there's extra, you know, environmental benefits. And I think that's the most exciting thing about like this space. Not just solar, electric vehicles. When you switch to an EV, generally the dollar per mile compared to like if you're going to a petrol station, of course, okay, energy prices have fluctuated a lot. But generally, like the expectation is about 60% that of if you are going to a fuel station to go and like pump petrol. Right? And then of course, there's also like benefits of like less moving parts in the car, so lower maintenance costs. All of those are these examples of technologies that's like, hey, it just makes sense.
Yeah. I think like coupled with like the maturity of like all these technologies is also like how policies are also increasingly penalizing like pollutive behaviors. Yeah, also like what you said, right? You're not just like spending more, you're spending well. I think that is also representative of like if you were not to spend well, right, it will be the case where you're just paying for taxes, being penalized for more pollutive like options, like maybe petrol cars. I think by 2030 or something, we will stop issuing COEs basically for petrol cars. And yep. from then on, you're basically just phasing out these petrol cars, right? So basically the money that you spend in this petrol car, you will not get anything back at the end of it. That will be the last batch. Yeah. So I think when you think about what you want to spend on, you also have to consider the larger context of like, hey, this would be increasingly more pollutive. I'll be increasingly taxed more. I'll be paying more for maintenance. There'll be fewer and fewer services that will be basically supporting this lifestyle. So vis-a-vis, right, there'll be more economies of scale in more sustainable lifestyle and habits. And then that's basically when you do the substitution from more polluting to less polluting behaviors. I think that's where you can actually reap the economic benefits as well. Mm-hmm. Like now it's, I would say like quite a sweet spot. Like we are starting to see the economic value proposition of a more sustainable lifestyle, more sustainable living, vis-a-vis like more polluting like practices or services that exist now. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that is really on some level very cost-saving kind of thing, right? Essentially, your policy is trying to make it more painful for like not sustainable, like pollutive habits and all that, right? So trying to incentivize the consumer from a cost-saving standpoint, right? But how does my cost-saving choices then translate into actual benefit for environment, let's say? Or should I just look at it as, oh, this is cheaper and the person tell me it's like better for environment? Okay, I think.
I mean, when we first started out, so like we've been working on the business for 2 years, spoke with a lot of property owners about like the decision to move solar. A lot of customers will come and approach us to say like, hey, you know, I want to go green. But ultimately, when you put kind of option A and option B, even if option B is more pollutive, but option B is a lower price, like they tend to, human psychology, I mean, you go for option B, right? Most of the time. Of course, there are some exceptions, but I will say like those are really like exceptions to the norms. But then in a model where you have both things together, then that's like, hey, you know, of course it's just a sure, of course do that.
Same
like,
price,
why,
right?
Yeah, take the better why one. Not? Mm. So I think that's the best part about it. In products where there's a trade-off, then that's really like up to you to balance. I mean, because there are going to be non-financial benefits to products as well, potentially, which you want to take into consideration when you're making a purchase.
Okay, fair. So then give me some interesting things that I should look out for when I'm renovating my home. Okay, so let's say today I take a BTO, right? And then HDB tell me, oh, you can take this and you get like 10,000, you can renovate the basic things for you, right? Your toilet bowl, everything, all the basic stuff, HDB covers, right? And everything else is up to me. Like, how am I going to spend my money, right? So let's say young couple, we got our BTO, we want to renovate our house for 10-year life. Okay, at least. So what are some things that I should think about?
Lester's thinking about how he did not directly plug the product.
Exactly.
Human terms.
Yeah. Okay, without plugging gush, right? Yeah, even though gush is the best, everyone should just get gush products for all the interiors.
Yeah, later I'll get my invoice team to send you an invoice.
He's actually the sponsor.
Yeah, actually the sponsor. This is a native sponsorship. Okay, please
continue. So, I mean, personally for me, I look at things and when I step into our customer's shoes, it's really like just overall from an energy perspective, right? Of course, I think some product purchases, I think are already quite generalized that everyone knows like, hey, these are the norms to do. Like your energy efficiency stars or ticks, right?
That is the number one question I have in my head. What's the difference between 3 tick, 4 tick, 5 tick?
Oh, I'm no
expert. The only difference
here
that I know is the price.
Generally, the ticks are rated based on your energy efficiency or like rather the output of your per kilowatt hour usage. So for example, like a aircon will say, hey, I don't know what the specific numbers are, but like the more number of ticks, the more you're able to regulate a certain temperature just using a certain amount of kilowatt hours of electricity.
So has anybody modeled it relative to the price that you pay for utilities? Because that's one thing that I wanted to do.
I'm quite sure someone has done it. I've read studies.
Personally, I've not, but I would like typically look at the label and be like, someone has done the science behind it and the math, right? To be like, okay, I deserve this label. And yeah, I think because like these products are also more energy efficient, they may tend to last longer as well because those that are less energy efficient, usually like machinery is also older. The technology is less advanced. That's why it's less energy efficient. So I guess if you're really looking at a home in this climate, given that you put in a very hefty investment, heftier than other batches, right? You probably want it to last longer, which I think why people are also like investing in basically really good appliances as well. And these appliances appliances tend to be more energy efficient or maybe even more technological advanced, such that it is also correlated with like energy efficiency.
So there's no easy resource out there, like this crazy guy that like put some kilowatt meter, you know, and like, just,
I'm sure there are definitely
do you know somebody that's
that
doing
those kind of things?
Like
Singapore, I don't think there is. But in China, I've heard of a lot of people who do that.
Okay.
Not just for appliances, but also for like the quality of the building materials that they use around us.
Yeah.
But actually, no, I think the tick system is quite a good gauge in terms of energy efficiency. In the era of rising energy prices, that is really something that people should consider on a more practical sense, right? It really would increase the amount of money that you pay on a money basis, especially if you're not doing solar with Bolong.
Okay, I'll invoice both of you.
There's an actual body that I think that does this.
Yeah.
And for the built environment case, for built materials case, it's a SGB, Singapore Green Building Council, who issues this Singapore Green Building Product Cert. So the number of ticks correspond to energy waste management policies that you have at this factory, logistical shipments, and then also like what's the VOC level, what is the level of pollution that you that this creates for the interiors.
There's also this really interesting option that like Electrolux came up with, which is appliances as a service. So that's where you can actually like rent their fridges, their dishwashers, and as well as like their washing machines. So you can choose like the period they want to rent it for.
Service, like,
yeah, appliances.
I approve.
Please continue.
Yeah, so basically like these appliances, I think it's a good option because like sometimes your appliances may really get too old to be energy efficient anymore. And you're just like holding on to this appliance that's no longer keeping up and costing you a lot of energy, as well as you say, right, rising energy costs. Yeah, so I do like the option because like you don't actually have to worry about, you know, getting rid or disposing this piece of equipment. And rather this equipment can also be shared with different households because it's being rented. So you can choose a period you're renting for. After that, maybe they put it to the next household. So I actually like this option because it is not just sustainable, right? Because you're sharing appliances, and of course, like you get to upgrade appliances as and when, and of course, get it to be the most energy efficient that it can be, and you don't deal with like spoilage and stuff.
That's
like
so interesting.
Yeah, so you get longevity actually with the exact function you need it for. You can even test it out before you buy it. So that's better, right, than buying a lot of new appliances, getting rid of it, and like it's really a convenient and as well as a low upfront cost option. As in like, given that they're providing this model, right, they would have to ensure that it works, right, in order for it to be profitable, because in the end of the day, they're like a huge MNC and it has profitable. I feel like this service definitely benefits the consumers in a lot of ways because you don't have to commit to a big piece of equipment up front. You don't have to deal with not liking it, wanting to get rid of it. That's definitely not sustainable, right? Getting more than one equipment. You actually get to test it out first before you truly commit to it. And you also get to replace it like once it needs to be upgraded.
Oh, that's good. Actually, I never thought of it that way. Like you can try out. There, we rent 1 year first, see if we like it. If we like it, we'll buy it.
Exactly.
Right?
You can rent for half a year. Maybe if you're renting. I mean, like let's say if you're doing like a short-term rental, right? It could be like six months, and then you can even upgrade the equipment after.
Yeah.
I think personally what I like about it is that even if I stop my subscription or let's say if I stop it, like the equipment goes to another household. Like I don't have to worry about, hey, it's going to be thrown away. Yeah. It's not going to be reused. Yeah, it's going to be disposed. I think that's definitely a waste of a good piece of equipment. I would say that the company definitely has to ensure that, hey, this piece of equipment goes on to the next household in order for it to like break even for them as well.
Interesting.
Yeah, so the responsibility is more so on the company to make sure that the product is amazing and the product works. And of course, I have consumers that want to use my products again and again.
The longer the useful life, the...
Exactly. Mm. So like they're incentivized to not like plan for obsolescence.
Because the longer the appliance run, the energy efficiency will depreciate, right? I assume.
It could depreciate, but at the same time, like when it starts depreciating, as a consumer, I could upgrade it. I would say the company is probably their responsibility to also upgrade the equipment.
In such a model.
Exactly.
That's interesting. Yeah. Okay, great. So that's for appliance. Okay, and are you seeing this model more and more people applying for it? Like more merchants using this model of like rental, like you can rent these things?
There's actually another company that provides tech equipment for rental. It's called Now Circular. So I think they've partnered with a lot of credit cards actually to basically provide this as like a perk. So Now Circular, basically you can rent like phones, iPads, MacBooks, gaming equipment, camera equipment, maybe. I'm not sure about monitors. Yeah, but basically you're able to rent all this equipment for a try. I think it is cool because sometimes like you may not want to commit to one equipment and it's really expensive. Sometimes a second-hand one works just as fine.
Yes.
And sometimes you may want to try out a few before you commit to one of your own.
Yeah.
So this is probably I'm thinking they probably use refurbished material. I mean, refurbished equipment, or it could be brand new. But I think it also at the same time offers customers the flexibility. I think it's really like as a service like option, right? Basically, you have the option of not putting the upfront cost. You pay like a much lower like upfront cost subscription fee to basically get a longer term of your use, or rather just to give it a try before you commit long-term. So now Circuit is another option that's great for like trying, I would say like trying phones. Like it may not be the newest model, but you get to try like different models, different brands until it works. Even for like a lot of Apple products, like Apple Pen or iPads, MacBooks, I think those are good for trying before you commit to it. Or maybe even gaming device, right? Maybe you're going for a trip, like 2-3 months, you want to have a gaming device. You don't have to buy like a Nintendo Switch. You can just like rent it on the website. And I think what I really like about it is that it has a lot of use over time. Like you're not the only user and you don't have to worry about getting bored. It's just sitting in your house. And of course, it's a waste of money. And of course, a waste of the equipment itself.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think the whole idea of like going increasingly to a sharing economy where like people are looking more for like quality appliances yet in an affordable way, I feel like all these rental options are really good.
My appliances are also for rent. You want to make it into a set, right? Yeah, please email to us. I'm very open for this.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
So those are appliances. What about fixtures, right? Fixtures is also a big thing. And for all of you that don't know what's a fixture and a furniture, anything that moves is a furniture, right? And appliance is a subset of furnitures, right? And fixtures are anything that are like built in, right? So your cupboards, your tabletop, you know, paint considered fixture?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, yes, fixture. Yeah. So, which is important because in the Singapore law, right, fixtures cannot be moved, right? So if I buy from you, the fixtures are inherent in this transaction. Whereas furnitures, I can move it.
Loose.
Right? Because there are a lot of case scenarios where people remove the tabletop. It's like, wow, this marble top very nice. They thought they bought this, you know? And then when they shift in, the guy removed it. So know your rights, okay? Fixtures are well within your rights. You can have them, right? So any thoughts? Like,
back to what I was saying earlier, the central body which is governing this is the Singapore Green Building Council. So most products that are at least sustainably rated in nature, they would have those tick systems. And in these cases here, it would actually point to the quality of the materials itself, on top of them being having good energy and waste management policies. And then on top of that, also your volatile organic compounds that are released over a period of time. So I guess in terms of advice, look for those that have like 4 ticks.
Market leaders, you have 4 ticks.
At least.
Okay. So tell me what's the I mean, this volatile organic compound. Okay. Yeah. So how does that work and why is it different between like, you know, the good products and the chachap products that everybody's familiar with. Or like at least the stuff that everybody uses,
lecture
right?
Time.
Yeah. Traditional adhesives, paints and laminates always off-gas a lot of these VOCs, right? Volatile organic compounds over a period of 8 to 12 years. And the reason is because as they cure in room temperature, it releases all these chemicals. And it's the reason why densely constructed countries like Singapore have a high correlation of respiratory issues, especially in the young. So this is why you see, you know, you throw a stone in Singapore, you find someone with sinus issues or asthma issues, right?
In the morning, you call your friends and say, hey, why you sound like that? So, oh, I got sinus. Sorry.
Okay. My one tick fixture is in my home.
okay.
So actually this goes beyond like sustainability, it also goes into health, right? Like if you're more concerned and curious about why this is happening to you, then this is really one of the reasons why.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit, like what's the long-term kind of health benefit? You know, let's say if I use a better quality paint, like do you model this thing or is there some ideas around it that I can play around with when deciding if I should pay a premium for some of these things? We are on consensus that your paint is expensive, right?
It's competitive in same class.
Okay.
So then I think for the value that's provided is a lot better. Because we work with a lot of developers as well. For example, beside an AHU, an aircon unit, or like in a highly moist environment, like your washrooms, usually you have a lot of mold problems. And what then happens is that they will rectify the issue every 2 to 3 months because mold keeps reappearing again. So getting high quality products would then help to stop that problem right from the beginning already.
So how often do I need to then repaint my home?
For us, when we developed our paints, we wanted to make sure that it can last you for a long period of time. So, efficacy lasts for 5 to 8 years. Even after 8 years, you don't have a visible aesthetic difference on the wall. So you can still keep it the way it is.
But it's just the whole health thing no longer exists.
The half-life is done.
Okay. So then when I repaint my wall, do I need to scrape the whole thing and paint again?
Well, that's the beautiful part of it. You don't have to. You just repaint on top of it. As long as it's the outermost layer, then it's fine.
Also, other than paints, right? What about flooring? What about like wood, cement, you know, some of these things, which are all like part and parcel of our fixtures, right? I think a lot of people don't think about, because they go in to tell the contractor, I want this, 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 yeah. And then they walk out. And then they come back and say, hey, wait, some more, not in the right place, right? That's what we do when we look at a new house, right? But any thoughts on some of these?
I mean, in terms of like, okay, maybe this is a more niche audience, but like for those who are building their homes and are speaking
niche.
With...
I can assure you, it's very
okay,
niche.
But maybe, I guess even for like... If they are able to make decisions about like, okay, how their windows will be like, right? So maybe not like fully fitted like condos in that sense, but then those who have that choice, generally there's a lot of people who like kind of like the architectural style of like a lot of open, tall glass windows. Okay, because I come from like a energy consumption lens, right? Primarily. These kinds of architectural styles with a lot of open glass windows, so like in a way like the modernist kind, typically have a much, much higher energy consumption because it absorbs heat a lot more. If you are able to make decisions around like the build of your house, generally having lesser windows, if you have very little like biggest windows, or otherwise you keep them, instead of having windows, you replace them with just like ventilated vents, but then use a lot more concrete in your construction. That energy impact of how much electricity you need to keep your place cool is a lot lower. Yeah. Of course, there's one other problem, which is the embedded carbon of concrete or cement, right? Which is how much carbon goes into like the manufacturing process. Like the entire concrete cement industry is a huge like carbon emitter. But then we have seen this in a lot of our clients' homes, like those clients which use kind of like a mix of like concrete and like that architectural style where like there's a lot of like natural greenery, like roof gardens or like, you know, vines that like creep up the wall. A lot of them, even for like sizable terrace house, their energy consumption could be generally like between 600 to 1,400 kilowatt hours. So my HDB, for example, I use about like 600 to 700 kilowatt hours per month. While those that I see, like, hey, they use the modernist design, like a lot of like white, long floor to ceiling glass, a lot of them, their energy consumption is typically around like 2,000 to 4,000 kilowatt hours.
Wow.
So a lot big higher, difference. Right? Mm. I don't know, like, on a completely scientifically, like, apples to apples basis, what it's going to be. But then, like, this is my observations. Like, whenever I step into a house, before I even assess, I ask the customer for their electricity bill. I'm like, I can more or less tell.
See, like, as the world, like, kind of warms up, right? Like, that's pretty much, like, what climate change is about. I think what Balong touched on was basically, like, the concept about keeping a house cool or, like, natural ventilation. Yeah, so I think natural cooling or natural ventilation is getting pretty popular because, like, the cost of cooling is getting more and more expensive, given that electricity is also being more expensive. So, like, in the West, they'll care about like the cost of heating and cooling when winter and summer respectively. But for us, like, it's definitely about the cost of cooling. Yeah. So I think if, like, as you plan for a new home, right, given that energy is going to be such a huge recurring cost, and given that it's going to be hotter and hotter, you definitely want to find ways that can keep your house cool for a longer time. And I think the part about like windows is because it's not a good insulator at all. Yeah. So maybe consider like double glazed windows, or even like concrete, or even like just having like some spatial space, right, to have that insulation between your house and the heat. Yeah. That will actually help to cool down your house significantly and reduce like your energy usage at the end of the day.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, our ancestors have in this part of the world has kind of figured out already, right? Those vents, the wooden vents, and it's becoming trendy these days. A bit of trendy, yeah. But actually, it's been around since forever.
I would say like before, right. Windows used to be like, you know, the panel by panel, and it was like vents.
You move that thing.
Now it's like all panes, so that's like very limited space for airflow, like let's say if we were to rain or anything. I'm not sure if it's optimal as well. But I think considering like how your house can be actually designed to have a natural airflow, that's important as well, because you get a natural breeze. That really helps to reduce your energy consumption.
Nice. Yeah, they must learn from the ancestors. I mean, they've already done it, right? And they have like a lot of little holes along the corridor, but these days our corridors are whole slab, right? So I think there are some things that we can go back to our
roots. Even when you choose your house layout as well, like if the layout doesn't facilitate a good airflow, you probably know that your house is going to be very stuffy, very hot. You're going to have to turn on the aircon all the time.
Feng shui, so I'll say, like, not good.
Maybe you still have a choice of like the layout of your house or the your next house, right? When you're upgrading, it really could be like considering the airflow of that unit, because the airflow will actually determine like how you get the natural ventilation, and it can actually play a really huge part in terms of like reducing the heat in the house.
Cool. So appliance, we went through some of these fixture stuff. Tell me a little bit about the solar panel thing, right? Because I think solar panel only for landed house. Does it matter to people that live in an apartment? Like, you know, is there something there for us?
Unfortunately, like, short answer is kind of no. But then generally, like, the most effective way currently for you to harness solar energy is on your roof. So this means that the benefits of rooftop solar typically accrues to the building owner. So if you have a landed house, and of course, like, you directly inject the solar into your energy consumption and you get free electricity. If you live in a condo or HDB, it will be your HDB or condo MCSD respectively that benefits from it. And generally, I mean, they don't have too much incentive to kind of like
translate
give
it to
you savings. Mm.
Is there some policy in Singapore that allows you to sell back the electricity from the grid?
Yep. Yeah. So if you are a solar homeowner, and generally there's also a lot of misconception, because a lot of customers will ask us like, hey, if I install solar, what happens at night? Will I lose electricity? Before I started the business, I always thought that it was like just some myth that people have, that kind of misconception. But I've really had customers who asked me that before.
Install batteries, that's a simple answer.
Yeah, no, but you don't need to. Oh, so in Singapore, like, whenever you install solar, so if your home is consuming electricity, your solar panels will just directly feed the electricity into your home. If you have more solar that's generated than your home is consuming, this automatically feeds back out into the meter. SP will measure it, and then SP will pay you for it. So the funny thing is, like, because of the energy crisis, wholesale market rates have been extremely high, meaning like what the retailers are buying, right? This is a price that changes every half an hour based on demand and supply. Wholesale market rates earlier this year were generally about 50 cents per kilowatt hour, even up to like 70, 80 cents. Yeah, so in comparison, SP's current rate is about 30 cents per kilowatt hour. So we had some solar owners who had a net negative $300, $400 electricity bill on a monthly basis because they were getting like a really, really high price for the part that's exported and sold to the grid.
Okay, suddenly you see everybody has solar panels.
No, but it's really
Money, profitability is a business.
It's really very worth it. I think as people start to trust solar, like, adoption will just become higher, right? Because ultimately, if you look at the math behind it, if you look at the numbers, all the built systems, you realize that it is almost like a no-brainer decision. The only question is how early you break even on your cost. For the homeowners, we call it rent to own, where we basically just charge them a fixed monthly fee in exchange for installing, financing, and maintaining the systems on their behalf. For landed homeowners, for example, just the average landed homeowner will pay maybe $250 per month for the solar system. Their solar savings on a monthly basis is generally between $300 to $400, right? So a lot of them end up having a net $50 to $150 savings on a monthly basis, even while they are paying down for the solar system during the contract period.
Eventually, someday, you know, some of these things will translate into HDB owners, condo owners. I hope so. Like, you know, I'll lobby around the pool, okay? Tell your MCS team to give you something, exactly. Right? But what about day-to-day living, right? So we kind of gone through some of the big things, you know, in renovation. But how do I then consider, are there some day-to-day lifestyle choices, you know, that I can think about before I start renovating my space?
I would say, like, consider what your current key expenses are. Yeah, because I think based on like what you currently consume a lot, like maybe if you guys cook a lot, then food is definitely one of your high expenses. You definitely want to find like options to basically reduce wastage, or like to just get things in bulk in a cheaper way. Yeah, so I think there are bulk stores, for example, that allows you to shop package free. So that's one way that you can get your goods without packaging.
Is it really cheaper?
Yes.
Okay.
I think yes.
Because they always make until very atas, you know. So but I feel very afraid to. It's like, what's that company? There's one company at Paya Lebar Square.
Scoop or something, right?
Yeah. So, I know they are definitely expensive. Yeah. You know, way more expensive than others, but everyone else emulate that renovation style. So I'd be like, I don't dare to go into this shop.
There are actually like really household options. I think those options are really like franchise model. So they do look very premium, and they come from like the Western world as well. So that's why like they have a certain like perception, you know, where things are perceived that way. But I would say like, just think about it, right? If you're talking about package free, what's like the most traditional way that people have shop package free? You go to the wet market. Nobody thinks the wet market is expensive.
Okay.
Right? You can get your coffee beans package free there. You can get your dried goods package free there. You can get like biscuits, your household items, your rice like package free there.
I was very excited when I see the biscuits store.
Exactly.
You know those
tins
one?
Exactly. So I think when you talk about cost, right, I think why you can actually be more cost savings, because you don't have to commit to a big packet. Mm. I think more often than not, like you're buying something, you have to commit to the standard packaging size that the packaging gives you, and you don't actually finish it all.
But doesn't buy in bulk makes it cheaper?
If you are going to use everything, okay. If you're going to use every part of it. And I think when you buy from these wholesale shops, right, they are already in bulk. Mm. So you're actually enjoying like the savings that they get from getting that material in bulk. And then you're just buying a bit of it. Yeah. So you're actually buying what you can actually consume at a bulk price. Yeah. So that is definitely one of the more of the cost saving part that you can actually adopt. And it is already cheaper. It is also package free. And more importantly, you just get what you need. Yeah. So I think getting what you need is probably a good practice that you can have, like in terms of the key expenses, right? If you just get what you need, probably you'll be saving a lot already.
What about plastic containers? Okay, so let's say I'm kicking down the can down, right? Like, okay, I don't take the packaging, nothing. So I actually got to bring my own stuff to go and pick it up, right? Is there some thoughts around like what kind of containers should I use?
Yeah, I would say if you're looking at like maybe food tapao or hot food tapao, I would say like glass or metal would be a good option. Yeah, because plastic leaks chemicals as well. So that I really wouldn't recommend because...
Even all the what free, BPA free, all those, they also leak.
So the thing about BPA, what's BPA free is only free of BPA.
Okay, every single other rubbish inside. Okay, exactly.
So what's BPA free is only free of BPA. There are all the other chemicals that come with it that they are actually not free of, which actually still leaks when it's in touch with like hot material. Yeah, so that is, I mean, detrimental. And I think glass and metal is just less reactive. So that's where I would definitely recommend those options for tapao. I think now also when you go to the food court to tapao, to take away your food, they charge you for the container now.
Yeah, so bring
your own actually makes a lot of sense because I think what I like that's convenient about it, I bring my own container, I go and tapao, I don't incur that charge. I bring it home, I'm not afraid of leakage. I can put it in my microwave if I need to heat it up.
That was where my head went, immediately just put it in.
I just put it in the microwave and I heat it up. I don't have to like be concerned about like heating up a styrofoam box, which you shouldn't. And I think that is
one.
So that's some of the convenience I would say that come with it. I would say this lifestyle kind of comes with like both cost savings, convenience, and as well as health benefits, or rather like just mitigating health risks in general. So that's probably another thing that they can adopt.
You bring your container if it's bigger, so then you'll fill up the Tassai fund to fill up the container.
It's true.
I like to like top up my drink in a tumbler, and always the uncle will be like, oh, I help you top up to the brim, then they feel very happy about it. I also feel very happy about it.
They feel very proud of themselves, like, right? Yeah, I get it. Because a lot of these merchants, when they sell you things, they're used to the standard size, right? But when you bring them a container that's irregular from their standard size, they'll be like, how much should I put?
Yes, exactly. Sometimes they're just like, just give me one portion, but so far it's been very encouraging. Like they'll be like, oh, I really like that what you're doing, so I'm just gonna top it up to the brim for you. And anyway, the cup costs them. So if it's gonna cost them and they're nice enough to return that cost savings, that's great for you. Otherwise you'd basically escape right the 10 cents, 20 cents, 30 cents charge. And I think that all piles up if you're gonna be eating out often. Yeah, so there are options whether you're cooking or whether you're eating out, like ways that you can basically make it like money saving as well.
Nice. Okay, any other things in closing for renovating a new couple trying to set up their own place?
I'll say that maybe just some rule of thumb, like really just consider like what's the budget that you have for renovation, and of course how long you intend to stay in that space, because with your budget and how long you intend to stay, right, you may actually really be able to find a good fit between like what's sustainable, what's economical, and as well as what gives you really good benefits in terms of health, and of course further benefits in terms of the environment. If you want something that lasts really long, it's likely going to be a more quality option as well that you're paying for. So I think just be prepared for that.
While a lot of Marie Kondo's methods are about like decluttering what you already have, if you're moving into a new place, I think like there's a super conscious about what you want to buy and what you want to add to your house. I think the good thing is in general, like now the style which people want to go for generally is quite minimalistic, you know, not a lot of furniture around. I think that's like a super good principle to just stick with, right? Like, hey, before you purchase something, like you can really think about like, hey, you know, does this bring me value? Does this bring me joy? Like if it doesn't, should I like not buy it? Like, can I like rent it from someone?
Yeah. I guess you probably have like a good, like can form a checklist with the ideas that we have today. Yeah. And that could be like your own checklist for evaluating like what you bring into your house. Yeah.
Don't need a line with belongs one, actually. Just rethink consumption. You don't need to buy. If you want to buy something that lasts.
Maybe you shift house slowly.
When you shift houses, then this is usually when you throw away a lot of your old stuff. Like you shed a lot of your old skin. And then this waste is usually just thrown in the landfill. There should be another service to cycle this, right?
Okay, cool. Last question that I have for you guys, right? So if let's say as a stereotypical Singaporean getting a stereotypical BTO with a general idea of the cost, and then if I want to live this very sustainable like way of life based on all the ideas that you guys were talking about, what would be the price differential?
I feel like sustainability doesn't mean expensive. Yeah, most times like it is seen that way because like it's new, and new usually means not enough volume to hit that scale for cost to drop. So LCOE is still very high.
Levelized cost of electricity.
Yeah, so there may not be a premium actually, and you don't have to carry that mindset that it's always more premium.
Yeah, and I think it's important to for us all to reframe that for ourselves. As in, even personally for me, like it's important to consider two aspects of it, right? In terms of cost, like one is what the upfront cost is, and then the other one is like what the life cycle cost is, right? Life cycle cost will then take into consideration like how durable the products are. You know, like if it's something that say uses electricity that produces certain like organic compounds, then you want to take that into consideration because it is not just like in the instant when you're purchasing a product or when you're moving a house, like what that cost is. There's also like the life cycle of it.
Yeah, I would say that ultimately after you make the big move in, there will be the day-to-day cost, like the so-called operating expense, right? You have to like be concerned with. Yeah, so I think in terms of that, I would say ballpark wise, I think you could really save like maybe at least 20-30% because firstly, you're going to consume less or consume more mindfully. You're going to consume also like hopefully better quality products, but if not, you're going to consume less. So that will definitely save you money. And of course, there are ways to basically consume items that are more sustainable and affordable way, like I mentioned, right? Like package free, top up food with your own container.
Yeah, it never registered in my head that the wet market is exactly like scoops, you
exactly.
know? Like,
it's like
packaging, right?
Yeah, it's a different aesthetic to it as well, right? Yeah, it's so nice.
It didn't register in my head. Great
yeah,
one.
Yeah, so
great
I think
one.
Like package free, even bring your own containers or... I think like the rental services that I mentioned, like so now there are rental services for like appliances or tech devices or even for clothes. Like you don't even have to buy new clothes every time to refresh your wardrobe. There are rental services for that. And I think Carousell comes in as a really, really good like day-to-day like alternative for you to basically just find what you need, right? To grow through like your home's like journey and your own life journey as well. Yeah. So I think there are really different options that can really significantly reduce like your living expenses. Like I would say like having lived it myself, like I would say like maybe at least 20-30% of your cost is like lower than your peers.
Yeah. Great. And I mean, while you're talking about it, a thought came to my head, right? Like maybe we can think about reducing electronic appliances, like kind of dial back a little bit. You know, remember those days when your grandma will open up the thermo flask, like the very old looking thermo flask, and it works. It's still very warm, right? But these days, everybody wants a forever heated dispenser. And that is on some level really electrolyzing everything, right? If you can, we can wind back some of these things and use old stuff that our ancestors used then. It serves the same function at a much, much, much cheaper cost.
Yeah.
Right. So don't always need to buy new things. So thank you for your time. Appreciate. Woo!
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Great.
Stay tuned all the way after this quick note for our personal money question segment. Before that, I hope you've learned something useful today. Join our Telegram group, follow us on our socials, and check out thefinancialcoconut.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, so the first question is, what has been your best and worst investment you've ever made?
It's going to sound a little bit cliche, but I think like my best investment so far has been in my team. Because I mean, even from a personal standpoint, it's like they have allowed me to scale and achieve higher outputs, right? And I think that's the beauty of entrepreneurship in a way where you're able to go and build a team around you and go and execute on stuff. Worst investment, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind these days is like my tech stocks, basically.
Sorry.
I mean, but then it's like the lesson learned is like, hey, maybe if you do want to invest, and that my issue is like, if I have more time on my hands, I'll go and study the market and I deploy capital. But then in the last one and a half years, I've basically been super busy with the business and I just stopped looking at my portfolio completely. So I don't know how many percentage like lower it is at this point in time, but I can imagine it's quite bad. Right? Yeah. My parents will tell me like, this ETF, this stock they have put in is like, you know, 60% down. I'm like,
yeah. Okay, daddy's not going to trust you with like tech stocks anymore. Okay. Yeah. What is one thing under $100 that has been a game changer for you?
This has been very good. Like, it's glass, so I refill it. I've been using this for like last 3 years now.
And I wash it.
I wash it every...
You don't need to. Day. You don't need to.
Okay. I wash it, right?
Don't need you like, to clarify that. Yes. I already assume you wash it.
I drink probably like 3 or 4 of this every day. So it keeps me super moist and hydrated.
These days, like, when you're dating air, right, you say, I'm moist. Great, great. Last question. One place you learn that you think it's underrated?
For me, like, Carousell comes to mind because I think it is an app that I like, kind of, like, really just, I mean, helps me settle most of the things I need to get, like, be it sportswear or, like, golf gear or, like, maybe even electronics. Being able to, like, put my things back into the marketplace and also, like, fulfill my needs from the marketplace as well at a discount. Yeah, I think that's a place that I do refer to, like, quite often. Like, if I need, like, new gear or if I need to, like, basically get rid of stuff.
Hashtag to bless.
Yeah. Actually, we talk about bless, I think Olio is another one. Yeah, so Olio has been really useful for, like, blessing things. Like, I think one weekend, I gave away like 30 items and like my house was just like significantly like decluttered and it felt good like being able to bless things away and they just pick it up from my house, super convenient. Yeah, so I'll say like that's also like a good find.
Amazing. Okay, thank you all for your time.
Thank you.
It's been fun. Awesome. So thank you.